Good afternoon, good evening, good metal. My name's Coop and welcome to the Spoken Metal Show. This episode begins with an apology to the people that are now coming up in this episode who I interview. Beneath the Ruin had been, I've been sitting on this interview for quite some time as I was preparing to launch the Metal on Merseyside project that you are now all aware of with my other cohorts in that project. And the launch itself I recorded and will become part of another episode very shortly after this one, hopefully. But it meant that I had to put all my eggs in one basket and kind of help the guys, you know, get that project to fruition. So it took a bit of a beat and took me away from doing some of the Spoken Metal Show as we kind of made that happen. I'm really glad I did, and it's a wonderful project that I will talk about on later episodes, obviously. Incredibly important. And Dan was there from Beneath the Ruin, which is great to see him, and a whole host of other great bands and people on the scene. And I'll talk about that on future episodes as I kind of get to that. So I was sitting on this episode for quite some time. In the interim, I think they released Shadow of a Statue as a single, and now I've been able to hear the whole album as well, which is just fucking brilliant. It's as great as I hoped it would be. And then on the 28th of October at Satan's Hollow, they begin their UK tour. And I've talked about Beneath the Ruin many, many times before about how much I think they're very important and how I think it's great that we get to see them at the beginning of their journey and support them at the beginning of their journey as they kind of release the albums and they grow into what they should grow into. So it took a bit of time for this to air, this particular show. So I'm sorry about that, boys. Sorry, Case. But I think they understand. I did say to them via messages that I was like slacking for a reason because I was trying to get the Metal on Merseyside thing happening. But they're super nice guys, so it was pretty cool. But I mean, it's better late than never. So please enjoy this interview with Dan and Scott from Beneath the Ruin. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a really nice, I always say a treat, and I always say it's nice to do, because you know what, I just love talking to people who are as enthusiastic and are in the scene as I try to be myself. And for a long time I've championed this band. I think you've heard it on previous podcasts, I've talked about them, mainly because we've got a really unique situation, is that they're very new and we get to see their entire journey. And it's nice to hear it, and it's nice to see it on stage, but we actually get to sit down with some of those people in the band right now as I introduce Dan and Scott from Beneath the Ruin to the show. Thanks very much, guys. How's it going?
Hello, mate. Good, thanks. You?
Yeah, not too bad. We're doing okay. But it's, like I say, it's nice to sit down with you guys, because you've been very quietly, we've been flirting online and sending me some of the music. And it's great stuff. It really is. I'm so happy it lives up to what I hoped it would be after hearing you live. And probably a little bit more as well, to be fair. So the stuff you've been telling me is fucking, it's ace. I wouldn't have started that way. I would just said something else. But so, I mean, we've got a lot to get into. We're going to talk about the single that's upcoming. We're going to talk about the album that's kind of on the horizon as well. And we're going to talk a little bit about the band. But as I always do, when I've got two people on, ladies and gentlemen, so it's always fun to have two people rather than one, when we talk about the first music that you're hearing and the first bands that you're getting into. Where's that start? Who wants to go first?
Scott, you can go first.
Oh, there you go. Fair days.
Okay.
I'd probably say, like, as a kid, I was actually proper like indie kid. I was really stuff like Arctic Monkeys and that, because that was like what was becoming big when I was a kid. And then probably like everyone's first like metal band was Slipknot, obviously. Everyone loves a bit of Slipknot, you know. Standard. And then probably like I went through a little phase of really being into like classic metal, like Iron Maiden and that. But then when I was like 13, it was like death and black metal. So it's probably like a bit of everything. And now I finally went full circle and went scene kid. Now it's metalcore.
covered all the cliches. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. I went through like everything everyone takes the piss out of.
I love that you say everybody's first metal band was Slipknot, and for you and your generation, that's a truism. There'll be people listening at home going, of course it's Slipknot was the first band. The other two, there'll be a generation, and I'll put my hand up maybe a little bit before even before that, is that we was Metallica. And before that, it was Iron Maiden. You would have been like, I got into Iron Maiden, obviously, or I got into Metallica, obviously, because that's what everybody was. Slipknot, it's interesting that we
we see it that way, that, you know, there's Metallica, this huge metal band, but then Slipknot were, that maybe not so much now, I'd argue, but certainly at the height of their powers, were fucking everywhere. They were just, just everywhere, weren't they? And it was a, so were they your kind of your first love? Were they the first?
Kind of, but funny enough that you say it, actually, Metallica was the first band I ever saw live. My first ever gig, my stepdad took me to see Metallica and Machine Head in Sheffield in like 2009. That was like my first proper gig. That was what really made me go down the route hole, being like indie, and I listened to a little bit of metal that I hear occasionally, because Slipknot were the heaviest band that was popular. So like the first band I was regularly exposed to. But after seeing Metallica and Machine Head, that's what kicked off like exploring metal and wanted to hear all different types of stuff.
I mean, ladies and gentlemen, I wanted you to like this band, or I wanted to like these guys, but there'll be some older people out there that will listen to this and go, fucking hell, that was his first gig. I feel fucking ancient. That, you know, that was like, that's looking like, what, 2019, did you say?
2009.
Okay, sorry. So fucking hell. Yeah. Like, you know, but it's interesting, because I think what maybe happened there was, yes, that Slipknot do the, it's heavy and it's aggressive and everything, and that's great. But when you went to see like Machine Head and Metallica, they were playing, not that Slipknot don't, but they were playing like what's now considered classic metal songs. You know, the back catalogue of Metallica alone is littered with, we know that now because of like stuff like Master of Puppets, is listed with classic metal songs. So you must have been like, okay, fuck it, let's just riff after riff after riff. This is tune after tune after tune. And were you playing at this point as well? Were you kind of playing at the same time? Okay.
I'd had a couple of lessons. I was only like 10, right. So I'd had a couple of guitar lessons, and then I stopped kind of learning. But when I picked it up again, the first song I learned was One. So.
Okay. So hold on. Is this your parents taking you to this show?
Yeah, it was my stepdad taught me.
That's fucking boss, that is. Was he a metalhead?
Oh, yeah, he still is, very much so. He's in his 60s and that now, but he's really into stuff like Sleep Token and that now as well. So.
Oh, that's fucking ace, because that's the other misconception here, is that the people who are into it will get into it like in the sort of early days of Metallica and Slayer and whatever, they're moving through the different sort of years, that they just stay with that and they don't listen to any new music. And as we know, guys, we know it's fucking bollocks that like metalheads are like whatever's good, you know, it's like, so yeah, exactly. You listen to that, then you listen to Architects, and as things move over, you listen to Spirit Box, and you listen, and it doesn't matter. But that's an interesting misconception, isn't it? That they're like, oh, well, the older generation only listen to that older music. They fucking don't. That's just madness. That's cool. So, Dan, what about yourself? First sorts of bands and first loves, if you will.
No, mate, my first gig. So my dad's a bass player, and when I was really little, my dad took me to my first gig, and it wasn't quite a Metallica and Machine Head. It was Jamiroquai. That was quite different.
But that's but fucking, you know, like really polished. Yeah, it's a great gig.
And so I've kind of got into loads of different things through the years. So I've gone through every typical phase that there is, when it was like, again, like Slipknot and Korn. Again, my dad was one of them when Slipknot first came over. I think they did Wait and Bleed or something like that, and they played TFI Friday. My dad sat down and said, You need to cop a load of this, Dan, because these guys are mental. They're going to blow up. And sat me down and watched it. At the time, I was like, God, what am I watching here? And then, like, a couple months later, I was, like, there at Christmas with Iowa or whatever it was.
Yeah.
That sort of kicked off the metal side of things for me as well. And then, through the years, sort of done indie stuff, done punk stuff, done metal stuff, done straight-up rock stuff. And just been into everything, really. I quite like sort of your pop and your sort of R&B and stuff, because it's nice sometimes just to have a step away. And I think sometimes in like the songwriting, you can hear that. I like melodies of pop, because they are just catchy riffs, catchy melody lines. And for me in writing, you know, that's quite good. Do you know what I mean? If someone can latch onto something, it's pretty good. So more recently though, I think, like we've just been talking about then, you know, Sleep Token have been massive for me recently, Spirit Box, Loathe, and then Deftones are always a constant. And that's pretty much throughout the band, really. We've all got that very much common ground and with those guys. So that's been really nice to listen to recently and seeing those guys sort of do really well. You know, Architects bring me coming into like the mainstream side of things. It's been really, really nice to see more people getting into it.
Mm. I got to see Architects kind of a little bit before they broke. They were touring at amazingly. They were touring, being supported by Bring Me the Horizon, and it was nice to see that break. You could very much see kind of when they moved over into a whole different realm, and everything from the production and everything kind of just moved up a little bit. And it's interesting you say, although you do raise the dirty little secret that comes up on the Spoken Metal Show quite a lot, is that metalheads sometimes don't listen to metal. Gasp. You know, is this dirty little secret that, like, I know a lot of, like, some of the most heaviest bands you've ever heard, and before they go on stage, they're not listening to the most heavy extreme music. It's not the case. It's they're listening to something that's, you know, that moves them in some way, to get them in the zone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Be it the theme from Karate Kid to some kind of 80s synth, to whatever works gets you where you need to be. And this comes up a lot on the show, is that if it wasn't for those steps outside of genre, you maybe wouldn't get the freshness that the genre has every so often, where it steps out and it pulls something into metal, and then all of a sudden we're off again on a whole load of bands that kind of move forward with that. You know, it's like, you know, when rap gets mixed with it, with punk gets mixed with metal, and sometimes it's when we get those interesting moments that metal takes another detour and a more exciting way. You know, the stuff that Sleep Token are doing is predominantly metal, but you can see where they pulled from other things. Certainly visually, you can see where they pulled from other things. So I love it that both your parents were like, bringing you up the correct way, that they were taking you to metal shows. Did they let you go into pits and stuff? Was it that full on? I mean, you're 10 or something, Scott. So, like, are you in a pit at this point? What the fuck?
No, I was probably like, first time I went in the pit, I was probably like 13, 14. I can't remember what band it was. Shit. I went to see. I think it was like, I think I went to see someone like Rob Zombie or something, and I went in the pit for that. I was just kind of like, oh, I really want to go in the pit. And then ever since, I go in the pit every single gig and get the absolute shit beaten out of me every single time. But it's fun. I just went to see Knock Loose a couple of weeks ago, and that was absolutely wild. That was wild. I got to go on stage, do some stage diving, and that was fun.
Oh, shit. You could get on stage?
Yeah, it was at Outbreak Festival in Manchester. Oh, they're shit. Just, like, there's no barrier. You could just get on stage.
Fucking hell. I'm shocked. I'm actually shocked. There's no security, or no one saying knock the fuck out?
There's security at the side of the stage, but like, because it's like a hardcore fest, they really push, like, make sure that everyone's on the stage and stage diving, and that's crazy.
Because you would have gone to see those shows in arenas and festivals where you see them split them with the crowd split. You'd see the massive 20-foot gap and, you know, a wall of security, and then another 20-foot wall before you could even get to the side. But I'm old enough, unfortunately, to remember when you could put your arms on the stage. And so, like, you saw those videos, those Pantera videos, where people are climbing on the stage and jumping off again. And it's a shame we've lost that. I understand why we've lost that, but every so often, that's been a perfect example, you see that happen. I saw it at the Loathe show, actually. Well, actually, it wasn't the Loathe show. It was God Complex's show. But Loathe were, obviously, Kadeem was singing some stuff with
him. Oh, yeah, that was fantastic gig.
Yeah, and then people were stage diving. And for just a moment, I felt as I was back in time, in those times when we could do that, because there was a level of trust with the audience where they were like, look, no one's going to be a dickhead and kick amps over or kick pedals over or whatever. People are just going to jump off the stage and people are going to catch them. And it was this wonderful, it was a very inclusive feeling. It was very like, kind of, we're in a cool place here where everybody's not being a dickhead. Unfortunately, sadly, there are dickheads out there. I was watching the documentary last night about Woodstock 99 being like a perfect example of a lot of people acting fucking stupid, you know. And it's a shame we've lost that, because it's one of the great things that a band has, you know, being in a band yourself, when you look out, you can gauge the crowd and see how things are going. But if someone can, like, get on stage and then jump off in front of you, or the people are right close to you, it's fucking incredible, you know?
Yeah. I did my dissertation on Woodstock 99 back
Oh, shit. Ago. Yeah. Have you seen the documentary? Have you seen that documentary? Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely mental, isn't it?
Well, that's frightening and hilarious, like, but more frightening, I suppose, yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. When you see, like, the hardcore scene, and obviously, like, Scott being at outbreak and stuff like that, it's very like respectful. Do you know what I mean? Everyone gets it.
Exactly.
Like
yeah.
You've got to do those things in the right places and the right scenes. And that's exactly the right place to do it. And Will Stop 99 was not the right place to do it.
Yeah. But it's like the first time I've seen a singer call out someone in the audience for grabbing a woman inappropriately or something. Was that a hardcore show? Was that at punk shows? And that's probably the thing that maybe people who don't understand the genre don't realize, that's where it started, calling people out and saying, no, you can't fucking do that, and pick each other up and help each other out. It's not about what you think. It's not about fighting. It's not really about that. And everybody's going to look after each other and be respectful of it. And that, I think, gets lost sometimes, I think, with metal. Yeah. People that don't understand the genre don't really get that, do they?
No. But everybody that's actually there and in it knows what the score is, you know what I mean? They know what they're doing, and everybody helps everyone.
Yeah. So when you did your dissertation, what conclusions did you come to?
Well, it was in events management, so the conclusion of the dissertation was basically don't do that. Essentially, was the summary of the whole thing.
If only you'd done it in time for Firefest, you know, alone even put it in time for to read that, you could have been okay.
That's a whole other topic, that, isn't it, Jesus?
Unbelievable. Why? I mean, when you look at stuff like that, I don't know. Does it just fall apart because the people setting it up are just greedy and they don't understand what's going on? Do you think that's what it comes down to for stuff like that? Do you think that's why we've got to that problem?
I think in that situation, yeah. I mean, you have to do it on like a case-by-case basis, don't you? I think at the end of the day, like some people just have no idea what they're doing. You know, like they tried to replicate Woodstock when Woodstock was all about peace and love and stuff with a load of new metal bands that hated everything. So it's like, you know your audience. You can't just think like...
Well, that's the thing as well. Like, you know, Woodstock's very romanticized, you know, this peace, love and everything music festival. Yeah. But there's loads of things that as I get older, I didn't realize about the festival. You know, there was riots there. There was people getting hurt and stuff. You don't see that in the film and all that. But things like the classic thing being, everybody fondly remembers from the video, Jimi Hendrix playing this wonderful set, this beautiful music, you know, breaking boundaries in virtually every single song. But if you look to like the side and stuff, there's people fucking off because it was like 5 o'clock in the morning and there's people going home. They're like, it goes on at like five or 6 o'clock in the morning. No one gives a fuck. But we see that. We're like, oh, this is the, it was amazing, but it was framed interestingly, you know, as a lot of these things often are. So, now we get to the nitty-gritty. Let's talk first bands then. So the first time you play with a group of musicians, what are you playing? Are you singing? Are you playing guitar? Let's go with Dan first. We did Scott before. Dan, so when's the first time you start to play with other musicians and start to think about what a band might work out on?
So it was probably school and college for me. My dad wanted me to play guitar for a long time during like the beginning of high school, even the end of like primary school. You know, we had guitars around the house and stuff. And I honestly wasn't interested. I wanted to play football for a while. And when I got into like high school and college, I started getting into sort of more rock bands and accessible stuff like Foo Fighters and things like that. And really more the indie side of things. So I played in indie bands for quite a while. I did like a little acoustic duo projects. I did a couple of indie bands actually in Warrington, where I'm from. Played at like the Par Hall and Friars and a couple of bars and that around there. Played over in Liverpool at a couple as well. Roundhouse or Roadhouse?
Yeah,
I can't remember.
The Roadhouse. Yeah.
Roadhouse, that was it. We played over there in Liverpool a couple of times. And we were literally just basically, we had about three songs of our own and the rest of it was basically like block party covers, Foles covers, all that sort of thing. And I didn't really sing that much. I maybe did a couple of backing vocals, but predominantly I was a guitarist in the indie band. And then as time progressed, I kind of liked getting a little bit more heavier. And as we started progressing through like college, I was writing my own stuff. And I was kind of going a bit heavier with my guitar. So it kind of took me out of that indie scene and then into rock music. So I then formed with a lad that I was in college with a band called Hellbound Rebels. Terrible.
Okay. That's not bad.
Not great, but it's not bad. And I then did take on singing. So I was the guitarist and singer, there was a bassist and a drummer, and we sort of did basic rock and punk music, and it was sort of our own stuff, and we had that for quite a while, really. You know, going all around Manchester and the Northwest in general, to be honest. Again, did Roundhouse, did Roadhouse in Manchester, did loads of different places around the Northwest. And then I kind of wanted to progress my guitar skills over my vocals. I wanted to concentrate on lead a bit more because I thought that it could do some improvement. So we ended up getting a singer in, because at that time, that's what I wanted to do. And that became Target Renegades, which ended up going for about 10 years.
I remember them,
which was great, to be honest. You know, we got some really, really good opportunities. We played with Sumo Psycho, Iron Giant. We played with a lot of really, really good people, did so many gigs over a lot of time, some really decent festivals and stuff as well. And that went on for sort of about 10 years. And then, yeah, I guess sort of, you know, things happened, don't they? People moved away, people had families, people got married, that sort of thing. And we never really called quits on it, to be honest. The page is still up and we never said we'd stop. The last gig we did was actually just before the pandemic at Outpost.
All that, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was the last sort of gig we did. And then it just kind of fluttered away. And I was looking for a new project, put myself out there, and I kind of wanted to go back into the vocal side of things. I absolutely love singing. I really enjoy it. And I find it a really good challenge, writing melody lines and then matching the lyrics up with it. It's a different challenge to writing guitar for songs and for bands. And so I really, really fancied it. I sing all the time anyway, and I just really fancied it. So I kind of put myself out there. And originally I was actually looking for just like some cover bands and stuff like that. I didn't really want to do covers. I kind of wanted to do my own music as well. But to get sort of into it, I was looking at that. I temporarily did a project called Bridesmaid with a guy called JJ. And we recorded some demos at a place called No Studio, which is owned by Joe from Pine. If you ever heard of them, they play with Conjurer a lot. And we did some sort of demos then. And sort of towards the end of doing those demos, Jordan contacted me and was like, oh, seen you sort of on Join My Band, and you know, you like Tesseract, you like Sleep Token, why don't you come and sing with us? And then that was it. Then it kind of just stuck. He sent me the demos and I was like, yeah, that's a bit of me, that.
Yeah.
Went down, practiced at Pirate a bit, and here we are now.
I love it. I mean, there's tons to unpack there, but I love how you know, like, why do we have to stop bands to start other bands? We don't, do we? But it's this strange thing that's like, when people are in bands, like, well, I have to stop being in that band and then I have to concentrate on this band. And it's like, you could still be in Target Renegades. That's okay. Why is that a bad? There's no problems. It's just interesting that sometimes people go, I have to finish this project, put a thing on Facebook that I'm leaving and it's the end of an era and blah, 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 and creative differences or whatever the fuck. And then start. It's weird, that, isn't it? Now, we live in a time now where you can be in as many bands you fucking want to. It doesn't matter. You know, it probably helps. But I do think it's interesting when you talk about being a guitarist and kind of then moving into vocally and then that helping shaping how you write and how you sing. And I've often found that people who can play an instrument, be it the bass, the drums or whatever, and sing, it always adds this lovely extra dimension to it. You know, it's like, it's an understanding. It's everything from as simple as you being able to speak to a guitar player and go, actually, it's this, and I think it's probably this, and this is what I mean, and have that vocabulary that maybe someone who isn't au fait with the instrument would have. But it's also, you know, it opens up a whole set of doors and melodies that you maybe not have considered if you were just stock singers. And it's not anything against singers, but I just think it gives you a nice dimension if you can play other instruments. I'm always very impressed with a singer that can suddenly pull out a guitar and do the song acoustically and do that type of thing. It always shows that the melody is champion and the melody is the most important part of what's going on. So I'm always very impressed with that. I will say, before we get to Scott, I will say that I've seen Target Renegades. I've seen that before. And it does feel, no disrespect to them, that you feel, and it looks very comfortable with this band now. It feels, you know, the beneath the room, it feels that you feel very comfortable, and then things can get cool. And once you feel comfortable and it's like it's a nice environment, then you can start pushing yourself. And it seems like, and we'll get into this in a bit, but it seems like definitely this band now is going to get more interesting because of that, because of this comfortable area that you're in. We can go, okay, let's try and push some stuff. Let's try and push a few areas here now because we can, because then we're all on the same page. Scott, how about yourself then?
I used to, so my first band, I was like 16. I didn't do music or anything. Like, I just played guitar as a hobby. So I just like, I joined my mate's metalcore cover band to play a couple of shows with them because they wanted a rhythm guitarist.
What were they called, Scott? What were they called?
It's not, I can't actually remember anymore. You're, I only played two shows with them. I think they were called like Mountford or something. It was like not even like a metal sounding name. And I just like, I played like two gigs with them. And that was fun. And then I started like my own band with a mate I met in Wrexham called Sebastian. And that was like a mix of like Deftones, Tools type stuff. And I sang in that band and played guitar. But he was a hell of a drummer and he played everything in very odd meters. And I could not sing and play it at the same time. So I just could not get that the hang of like trying to sing and play guitar at the same time. So we recorded like a couple of demos and stuff. And then it just kind of, but we couldn't do live gigs, so it just kind of fell through. And then I went to uni, and I played in an Incubus cover band in first year. That was really fun. And then I didn't really do anything after that for like 2 years. I was in like a sludge metal band that got its name and stuff, and then just kind of fell apart before it did its first show. And then literally about 2 years later, I got asked to join Into the Fall for a little bit. I played guitar for them as their new lead guitarist because their other guitarist left. And then their drummer quit just afterwards because he's just that kid. So that didn't very much last very long. And I randomly got a message from Jordan about the same time as Dan being like, we need a new guitarist. Do you want to be the guitarist of BTR? And I'd like, he sent me a couple of demos and I was like, yeah, this is right up my alley. Go ahead.
See, like, so Jordan's the connecting tissue here. Like, God love him. We've got a lot of time for Jordan. He's a fucking great guitar player and an even better human being. And he seems like he very much had, like, you know, he's gone and picked his A team there. He's picked his like his Mission Impossible team. He's gone to you, Dan. He's gone to you, Scott. Is that how he did it? Did he recruit everybody? Was he kind of
It was a bit both. I think that they mostly went through like social media. It was Liam and Jordan because they were like the two founded the band.
Right.
Liam, apparently, so Jordan was like narrowing down the search for guitarists, and Liam saw me playing an Enter Shikari cover. Of all things, and it was like,
well, it's just on like YouTube or something.
No, it's just on my Instagram. This is like a 30-second clip. We try to play the riff from, I think it was from Hello Tyrannosaurus Meet Tyrannicide.
Okay,
And also you saw that I played a Polaris cover of one of the like, really hard songs. He was like, oh, this guy can do the tapping and stuff. And and Liam was like, this is the guy I want. And then Jordan messaged me. He was like, obviously, like, try out then. So like, Liam was the one who was very much sold on me being the choice for it. But Jordan like was completely fine with it and he was just like, yeah, let's give it a go, because like that... Jordan had a list and then he was just like narrowed it down, but Liam was just like, this guy likes the same bands as me. So
I love that he's got like a list like fucking Kill Bill and he's just putting the lines through as he gets each member, and the fucking, we need to get Jordan, let's keep getting like the lines. But isn't it fantastic? I think it is fantastic that that can be your calling card now, that you can get into a band or someone can, you know, headhunt you or whatever you want to say from a 30-second Instagram clip. You know, it used to be before those social medias existed, you would have to go and audition. You would go and you were, and I'm sure there was an element of auditions to what you did, but the fact that someone's watching all your videos that you put up, that you can almost kind of put your own show reel together and you don't know who's watching that, who's going to go, you know, let's get you a man. I think that's fucking ace. I think that's
it's like ace. It's like a little CV that gives you social validation too. Yay.
Look out. Yeah. Like, well, that's the other thing, isn't it? Is that like, people are only going to put them playing the most complicated stuff and you're not seeing the fucking 200 takes before that.
Exactly. I've literally like had phones that just like my entire camera library is just failed reels of just trying to nail down one riff, and even the version I post is like 80% right and I just give up and say that's the best one, I'll settle it there.
Well, you get away with it, don't you? Can say like, oh, this is a work in progress here, this is just me this is just me fucking around, when you know you put fucking 200 hours
into this.
Well, wasn't it recently there was like, and it's still, I think it's still kind of raging, that there's a big thing in the community, certainly the sort of session guitarists and teachers and stuff, of people fucking doctoring these videos, speeding them up, slowing them down, altering them and all that type of thing. And that's a whole fucking crazy world. That when you think about it, it's like, hold on, surely the video I'm seeing should be that person playing, but then someone breaks it down and goes, actually, if you listen, he's miming, and you're like, what the fuck? And there's all these things you have to look at now on a video that you're like, shit. Is he really playing that? You know, I think that's fucking, That's a world I didn't think we saw coming either.
Oh yeah, I mean, I saw like all like the Buried Alive accusations and stuff again. So it's like all of like the big like guitarist guys, they've all had it now. They all do like the disproving it videos. I've seen it with drummers and that as well.
Yeah,
but like, you know, I mean, the problem is it's just like musicians have just kind of got better. It's like not just like a technical, it's like there is like such a high bar for technicality now that it's just like some of it is just, are you even human? Like you watch someone like Tim Henson from Polyphia and you're like, this guy isn't a human. This is an android wearing an e-boy wig.
And it seems to go in tiers as well. It seems to go in tiers. So by that, I mean that the first time YouTube comes up, you see people playing song playthroughs, and they're normally very simple songs. Then you see people playing Both Sides of the Solo to the Sentinel by Judas Priest, or both parts to Animals as Leader songs at the same time, and stupid stuff like that. And it just keeps getting, people are getting better and better. And then there's the inevitable 10-year-old kid that can play it now, and you're like, how the fuck is this happening? But in reality, it's because the entry level and the entry is no longer barred. So by that, I mean, when I first learned to play guitar, it was through guitar tab books and people showing me. Certainly, Dan, when you were picking up a guitar, you know, 10 years plus ago, there wasn't that much of it out there. So you had to kind of go, someone showed me various chords and I had to look through a book. But now, if I want to learn sweep picking, there is a whole course of someone showing you how to do that with video examples and everything, and it all broken down for you. So the barrier to entry is almost dissolved, you know, completely. And some people might consider that a bad thing, but I don't see it as a bad thing. Being able to access this information just means people get good quicker. What's the problem there?
But I learned for free.
Pissed off with that. Yeah.
I mean, I learned for free. I literally, like, I know, I had like two or three lessons or so, and I was like 9 or 10, and I didn't play for like 3 years. My mum threatened to get rid of my guitar, so I was just like, oh no, I want to keep the guitar. So I picked it up and just like looked online. I was like, I don't know. I think it was Given Up by Linkin Park. It was like the first time I tried to pick up again afterwards. I literally just like looked it up on a tab, and then that's it. That's how I've learned ever since, just looking at tabs and then looking at theory guides now, because everyone else in the band knows theory and I don't know anything about it. I just improv and just be like, yeah, that sounds cool.
So then did you, when you were approached by Jordan, did you go and check Jordan's stuff out then? Did you go and stalk his? Yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, just kind of like, I am completely out of my depth here.
Because ladies and gentlemen, like I said, Jordan's a fucking hell of a player. He's that guy. Jordan's that motherfucker that you see online and you're like, let's see him attempt this song or this song. And then you go, fucking hell, he's even better than I thought he was. And you're like, motherfucker. And then when you see him in real life like I did, I was like, oh, you're amazing. But inside I was thinking, why aren't I as good as you? And why are you so good at this age? But
you think you feel like that? I'm in a band with him. I have that every practice.
But you know, I think it comes from fear, I think, because what happens is that people see it and they've been learning guitar one way and they don't realize that there's this whole other world and way of learning guitar. And they're just jealous that they didn't get on and have that access to that when they were that age. That's what it comes down to. I'm just purely jealous. That's all it is. But then when you started like really getting into playing and playing the guitar, was it for you that you had YouTubers that you would follow and a particular people that you would go, okay, this guy's fucking great or this girl's particularly amazing? Was there an element of that? Yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple. It was like, I mean, not just like YouTube guitarists, people like Signals Music Studio and that really easily explains theory and stuff, but also like show some cool riffs and just like how to do stuff. I didn't really understand the theory part of it at all, but I'd be like, oh, this is what that thing is that I want to do. And then just kind of copy it by watching and then just like keep doing it until you get it right.
That's
it's
it.
Pinch harmonics.
Oh yeah, I had to learn
everyone
that. I had to learn that by listening to like, you know, early Aussie for Zach. That's how I learned pinch harmonics. You know, I was like, how do you play that riff? So my fingers were roughly in the same area. I have no tab. Playing like Miracle Man, and because my fingers were in the same place, I got a pinch harmonic, and then I had to kind of reverse engineer it and figure out what the fuck I was doing. I was like,
That's pretty much the exact same as what happened to me. It was learning Slipknot songs, and it was literally like, I just don't get pinch harmonics. You watch a video, trying to watch someone play a pinch harmonic in a video, and they're like, what the fuck is he doing? He's not doing anything. It's just happening. He puts his finger over the fret, and suddenly it's a pinch harmonic now. It wasn't until I accidentally did it a couple of times and be like, I did something different there. What did I do there? And I was like, oh, I'm bending down the string a bit. And I'm like, you know, pressing down a bit harder with my picking hand, and then all of a sudden then you get it. But there's like no way you could learn that from watching a video.
The biggest thing for me when I started playing that I couldn't get, remember, I'm a metal listener, a metal guitar player, palm muting. I couldn't understand. Mm. It was explained. So what I would do is I would play, and I would, and you're meant to rest your palm on the strings, palm muting. I would just put my palm on there. I didn't understand the subtlety and nuance of what that was. And it took me weeks of my mate showing me, go, no, 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 this, the worst teacher in the world. No, 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 do this. And it's not showing you anything. And back and forth, I was like, I didn't get it. And then I remember being in the woodshed one particular day, and getting the balance of it where it is, and going, well, that's it now. Clearly, I am better than James Hetfield and must form many bands. That's how powerful it was that moment. But here's the thing, Dan, what I've seen is I've seen people doing vocal stuff as well now, like vocal gymnastics. Mate. What the fuck?
The thing is, right, so, I mean, you look at it in two ways, really. It's the same for singers as guitarists and stuff. And I think you know, us having all this access to incredible musicians all over the world, all over the internet, like, it can either, you can look at it and go, oh, right, well, sod this, because I'm never going to be able to do that. Or you can let it push you further. And I think you've got to keep on trying to let it push you to do better. So there's all that sort of stuff with the vocals, you know, even sort of recently. Now, I'm not a screamer, as you'll well know, very much, but I kind of like just trying the technique and trying to get it down, because it's nice to have it in your locker. And then you have people like in pop music doing like whistle notes and stuff, and I'm like, what how do you make that noise? And like, I watched a video that got shared in our band group actually a couple of weeks ago, of the singer from Lorna Shore. I forget what's his name now, Scott.
Will Ramos.
And I've seen some of his covers and stuff. I'm not a big fan of Lorna Shore. I'm not going to
lie. No, they're awful. But
it was really interesting, because obviously he does a really extreme style of screaming. And they had a camera down his throat whilst he was doing, and I was fascinated. I was like, wow, I can actually see how that works now. And it's, you know, it's because with, like, you know, with guitar, it's hard enough watching a pinch harmonic video, watching someone doing palm muting, it's hard enough to pick that up. When it's someone's throat and you literally cannot see anything that they're doing, it's like impossible. So to see that is like really good insight to go, okay, I need to do that. Well, I mean, I don't, because I'm never going to sound like that, but it gives you a good insight as to what he does to sound like.
But it's
that.
Like, I remember first hearing, you know, someone like Rob Halford with this incredibly massive vocal range, and realizing that, you know, there's some people simply do not have that vocal range. End of story. Yeah. They just don't have it. And then seeing someone like Bjork doing really sort of strange vocal things that I was like, this is unusual. And uncompromised in many ways. It was like almost difficult to listen to. And then someone like Mike Patton doing really weird things. And you get like someone like Rozelle doing, you know, beatboxing, because he's got a split voice box. And you're like, wow. And these things were like almost unattainable. But I think it's interesting that you say it's nice to go down some of these avenues, because like, you never know when there's a song you're going to play where that actually, something like that might fit. And it's worth kind of, okay, let's pull that out the bag. Let's try it on and see if it works with it. You know, one of the things that gets leveled against this access to, you know, knowledge and abilities and stuff and how-tos, if you will, is that it somehow robs the artist of individuality, because you're essentially, you're showing every part of it and you're mimicking something else rather than searching and finding your own thing. Probably the only really good analogy as I can give you is that someone like Eddie Van Halen, you know, came up with a lot of things born from there being nothing else there. So he kind of saw, I don't know, Jimmy Page doing a hammer-on, realized that if you move one of the fingers, it's like moving around the fretboard, and then he doesn't discover tapping, it's already existed, but he kind of looks at it and then starts and runs with the ball with it, and then comes up with his own style of playing, because there was no one else to really copy that much stuff off. So he births a whole his own sound, you know, and that can be seen with a lot of musicians and artists in general who create in their own sort of enclosed area. That can sometimes be a good thing, because you're completely away from influence. So it means that you dig deep and you come up with your own voice. That's the argument that gets leveled, doesn't it, against people that you know, have too much theory. You know, is there such a thing?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's important for any musician to be sort of have their own identity and be true. But I think that it's good to sort of experiment and take on board these different things, you know, and talking about sort of screaming and stuff there. But, you know, if I put the radio on and there's sort of Drake or some grime music on or something like that, and then we have like a really fast section in one of our songs, and I've heard something in like a grime song that I really like, it's like, well, maybe I could put some sort of flow into this and it'd actually work differently or something like that. And you see that with different bands, you know, you look at like Skindred with Benji Webb, like ridiculously, you know, individual sort of things, but they're taken from other places and that's how you sort of build what you like. And, you know, it might sound shit, it might sound good, you don't know, but it sounded good on that song, so I'm going to try it and see what it sounds like on this and sort of manipulate it until you get your own style. And that's what I kind of like doing. And, you know, I can't tell you the amount of melody lines that get thrown in the bin before I settle on one. And just because it's, you know, it's nice to try and find my style in that song.
Yeah, well, because like songwriting is very much destination rather than journey in many ways, isn't it? It's like, okay, let's try a few things here. And, you know, history's littered with songs where they went, okay, let's try changing the timing of it, or let's play at half speed or double speed or whatever it is. History's littered with these little happy accidents where someone goes, well, what if we did this? And what if we play with this? And what if we introduce this? That leads to sort of these great songs and these great moments where they kind of go, okay, let's take this step, you know? So then who's first in the band out of yourself? Was it yourself, Scott, or Dan? Who's first in the band, if you will?
What, as in, like, first to join?
To join, yeah.
It was Liam and Jordan formed that. They formed it together. They were the founding members. Yeah, they were in a band called Black Moment before, and then they kind of, that band split up, but Liam and Jordan stayed together and decided they wanted to do something a bit heavier. And then they went through a cavalcade of different people trying to get a group together, and then they started headhunting people. And me and Dan joined about the same time. Dan joined about a month before me.
Yeah, so Rory was before me marginally on bass, and then me, and probably even just a couple of weeks afterwards, Scott. Me and Scott were pretty much simultaneous at the same time joining the band. And then a little bit later on, Dre on the keys as well. So
that's where we sort of came out. Was there a period then where you were exchanging songs and stuff like that over online before you met in person? Then I would assume that happened a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it did in my experience, because I think I got sent Atlas. And a couple of others as well, actually. I mean, this is I got sent two songs that are actually now on the album, and this is, what, 2019? So that's how long these songs have been around for. One of them's actually a Black Moment song, and it'll be on the album. So I got sent those, some with vocals, some without, and then I was sort of fantastic. It helps me, because I can then write before I get to the practice room. It's all right to jam as a guitarist and a drummer and a bassist, but it's harder to jam as a vocalist. Yeah. So it's nice to have something prepared. As much as you can do it, it's better not to sing gobbledygook, you know what I mean?
So when do you kind of sort of have that first jam, and that's the first time you and Scott meet in person, or do you meet before? Or
No, I'd never met any of them before. I went and sat outside their practice space. I was sat on like the little benches as you come into the practice space. I didn't recognise anyone from the band. I'd only spoken to Jordan. I didn't know who any of the others were. And Liam just comes walking past me, and he's very easy to identify because he's massive and he goes to the gym and he won't shut up about it. He walks past carrying drums. He just looks at me and he goes, "You're Scott, you're our new guitarist, come here." And then just brings me through to the room, and I was literally just like, yeah, here's everyone. They just met everyone. That was like the first time I had like, the only one I'd even knew what they looked like was Sean.
And what was, so what happened? Did you kind of all plug in and just go?
There was some technical difficulties at the time, so everyone else, so like there was amps and stuff in the room, but Jordan's always gone all digital. And obviously we are all digital now, so I had to use amps and that at the time, which is a pain when we were playing our first few gigs, because everyone was playing digital and I had to use an amp, which it's you know, some sound guys love that, some sound guys do not like that so much.
But so what was the first thing you played then together then? When was the first time you met as well?
Yeah, I think it was first song we played was Atlas, first one, because that was the one I was sent, and I got to hear that track in full, and I was sent the tabs to learn it, and then I played for a couple of the other songs as well, very well, but you know, the one I'd heard the most was the one I was at least the best at, and then we just gave it a go, and literally only like about 6 weeks after I joined, we played our first gig.
Tell me it was like a movie moment where you're only like 8 bars in, 12 bars in, and you look at each other and realize it works.
Oh, definitely. Wow. Yeah. I mean, especially it was strange with hearing Dan's vocals for the first time as well, because I expected like the version I heard of like Atlas, I was expecting it to be all screaming because it didn't have vocals on it. And I heard Dan singing on it. I was just like, this is really weird, but do you know what? I really like this. This really works.
So yeah. Then you play a few songs and you kind of, are you into just them working up a set to play live then? Is it this fast moving as we're making
out? Yeah, it was literally like the first, like, we had like four songs that were more or less ready to go. They went through a couple of iterative changes. And then literally, like, as soon as I joined the band, you're just grinding out that set list, playing the first gig. And then most of those songs now don't really exist now. And like pretty much like everything on the new album, except for like two or three songs, are all written much more recently. They were written during the pandemic. We did a hell of a lot of writing during the pandemic. We've got like three or four albums worth of material. But yeah, like there's one or two of the old songs that we do really enjoy have made it to the album. A lot of the others will probably come back in some form some day, but they'll be probably completely different songs.
I think what was beneficial for us as well about that first bit is that the songs, the four or five songs that we did have down, were about 7 or 8 minutes long. So.
Oh yeah, they were so long.
That's one of the things I remember seeing when I saw you live, is it was like there's some immediate gratifications, you know, riffs and things, and some of the hooks are immediately pleasing, but there was, because the songs were longer, you get more room to maneuver. And so what I found, I spoke about this on a couple of shows ago, as the set went on, people be kind of open their ears even more, if that's the way of explaining it, it was like, okay, there's something there's texturally more stuff going on. What was the first gig then? It was
at Outpost. With I think it was Saturn Split we were supporting. Yeah,
right.
And I had another technical malfunction. I unplugged my guitar halfway through the set, so that was fun.
We've all been there.
Oh yeah, it was my first gig and my first like proper gig in like 3 years. So it was a bit of a shit show, so to speak. But you know, we all had a hell of a lot of fun. And afterwards, you're like, you know what? For a first show, that was really, really good, and it gave us a lot more impetus to kind of be like, yeah, this is a thing now. We are a band now. We've done a show together, and we're gonna keep going on it. And it really, really got us into it. And then we just wanted to do loads of gigs, booked ourselves on loads of gigs, didn't do any of them because COVID happened. Yay.
Yeah, I was going to say, just as it gets started, I talked to a couple of bands who had the same experience where just as they were getting started, the rug gets pulled from under them, you know, and it's you get this stupid situation where you're like, what? We can't even practice together? What the fuck? It sounds like, and it probably is the case judging by how you're all kind of interacted anyway, that you just kind of kept going, but just switched to all your you know, the available tiers, like, you know, like Zooming and Skyping and all that type of thing. Is that what happened then? You went, okay, well, we know we're a band now. We can't play together, or we can't do this, that, and let's just write and just launch into a whole load of writing. Was that the case?
Yeah, there was a lot of us all writing stuff separately. Like a lot of it was like we all write separately and then just kind of iterate together and be like, here's things I like, here's things I don't like so much, or like just kind of like songs go through development. And usually like it mostly be me or Jordan writes like 80% of a song and doesn't know what we want to really do with it, and then a load of demos get made, and then just like whatever ones Dan starts writing vocals on first, and nobody wants to get finished first because like, neither me or Jordan are really vocalists, so we're both just writing the instrumentals. And that is the thing I'd say we definitely have improved on, though. We do write a lot more around the vocals now, which is great.
I do want to talk, Dan, about the vocals, because that's easily one of the things that sets you apart from a lot of bands. And I listen, I'm a man of words. I get paid to talk. And even I struggled with exactly where I found your vocals, because there's lots of things going on in a really interesting way. I mean, did you kind of, you've been in several other bands and you've had several sorts of experiences in different genres as well. When you came to Beneath the Ruin, did you have a remit of your own, just for your own vocals on their own, about what you wanted to do? You said, you know, screamo maybe wasn't the way forward for most things. Did you have a remit of what you wanted to do vocally?
Yeah, I did, really. And I think that came from, I did a bit of experimenting. Like I said, I did that vocal project with The Bridesmaid before I joined Beneath the Ruin. And sort of the progressive metal and stuff that I was listening to, I preferred the cleaner side of those bands, do you know what I mean? So like your Tesseracts, like the Deftone stuff, all that. And I do like the heavy side of it, but for me, I was always drawn to sort of the cleaner side of things. And so I love metal, I love heavy music, but I like the clean vocals over it. And I thought, well, why can't we just merge the two? Do you know what I mean? So, you know, when I got sent some of the Beneath the Ruin songs, Atlas in particular at the start and things like that, I really wanted to try and just deliver my style over the top of it. And like Scott said at first, I think, you know, when we get in the practice room, you know, everything kind of works. And then you take a minute and you listen, you're like, God, that wasn't what I was expecting. But you know what? It actually does work, you know, and it's something a bit different. And I think it makes it quite accessible as well. You know, it's quite nice like that. I enjoy it. I love sort of playing around with it. You know, I like using sort of my falsettos a bit that you don't expect to hear and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And yeah, that is kind of my style with it, really. You know, it's kind of like merging metal and pop, I guess, because that's what I listen to and that's what I like. And I think it kind of works for us.
Yeah. I mean, and ladies and gentlemen, those that like, we'll put links obviously when the songs are available to hear and what have you. But that's one of the things I think you'll find is, let's not be confused here. You know, we're not saying that the dance, it's all clean, beautiful vocals. There's part of that, but there is force in the vocals. There's a difference here, you know, there's a force to it. And still, you know, there's an ebb and a flow. It's not all clean vocals. There's a strong element of crescendo. It's in quite a few songs that's the case, where there's a real journey going on. And you can only really do that if you have a good understanding of what you want to do vocally. It's interesting that was your approach. And also you get the wonderful thing that you've still got tricks and stuff you can pull out. You know, if you go all out and you know, you do the screaming and you do the force and stuff, you're going all the way over here. It's difficult to come back and go that way. Whereas if you haven't, that one day when people are kind of listening to one song and you pull that out the bag, it's going to mean absolutely everything then, because it's going to be a surprise and something unusual. It gives you options. So I think that's a really interesting way of approaching it. Certainly that's what I've found listening to what you've been doing, is that it's a different texture. The whole thing just gets textualized completely different with a different slam vocally.
I think it's good, just like I said before, you know, I think it's good having these things in your locker. You know, when I'm writing something, it's quite, you know, it's always very emotive, but there are parts of a song that are more emotive than others. And when you get to that crescendo, if I can bring that real raw power out of my locker, which I try and do, you know, it hits home a hell of a lot more than if I've done, you know, if I've screamed my way through a song and then I just scream a little bit harder. Then if I'm doing sort of, you know, clean vocals for quite a few, or two choruses out of the three are quite nice and clean and they've got this melody line, and then the third is just, you know, a big sucker punch, you know, that really hits home the message, I guess, that I'm trying to get across. Do you know what I mean?
Because that's like
the emotion.
Completely, because that's like, that's more, now we're in more Tool and Deftones sort of ranges there. We're in a different, you know, where it's like it's not all one sort of shade. There's many different shades, and that's what makes bands like that interesting, I think, and it means it accessible. It also, and I said this before in a couple of shows, certainly the preview shows I've done for some of the gigs you played, where that's a journey that's interesting to go on with a band, you know, especially if you followed someone like the Deftones from the very first albums and all the way through to White Pony. It's interesting to see what happens there vocally, and that's one of the things that I think, ladies and gentlemen, when you listen to Beneath the Ruin, you're going to get, it's that you are seeing the start, not a finished article by no means, and it shouldn't be either. You're seeing a nice journey. So that really kind of brings us nicely round to the new album and the new single. Like I said, I've been very kindly sent the new single, and I believe the kids say it slaps, so I've got that thing. I don't know what that means, but it's great. And the reason being, ladies and gentlemen, by the time this comes out, you might be able to hear this half the time, so it is. But the thing that I thought was great was that you both went out the gates playing the big riff to begin, and I thought, I'm glad they did that to prove that that's kind of in the bag. But then it goes all the way in several other directions in a really nice way. Was there a reason that's going to be like the first, well, it was the first single you sent me. Is that going to be the lead single then?
Yeah, so that's the idea now is that, so Sandalphon is the first single, which is the one that we sent over to you, Coop, and then we've got a flurry of singles being released, to be honest, in the next probably 2 or 3 months, followed by the full album itself, some music videos and stuff like that to come with them as well. So some really, really exciting stuff. But I think Sandalphon is a really good indication of what's to come on the album. So Scott started writing Sandalphon. That's one that Scott wrote, you know, probably over lockdown, Scott, I think.
And yeah, I think it was like August last year.
Yeah, wow. And I think, you know, for those of you that hear it when you're doing, if you already have, you know, it just is straight in there. There's no messing about. straight in with a ridiculous drum fill and then a big chunky riff. And, you know, we kind of wanted to go out. We love Uprising. That's been out there for a while now. And it kind of showcases sort of what we're about and where we sit, things like that. But we just basically wanted to slap people in the face with some big chunky riffs to start off with. And that kind of sets the tone.
Are you gonna
are
you gonna do a playthrough? Are you and Jordan maybe gonna do playthrough videos for this?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we already did, Jordan did one for Uprising, so he wrote Uprising, so I assume like I'll do this one, and then I think the next one will be is another song Jordan wrote, so the next one will be a Jordan playthrough. I think we'll just alternate it, because like
ready for when someone does a playthrough of that song? Are you ready for that?
That will be
your song. And it goes, actually,
that would be like a dream. That would be so cool to see someone play the riff I wrote.
100% that will happen. And what they'll do is they'll do the tiered thing first. They'll play it. Someone will put it online and be like, this is me playing this. And it'll be excellent and it'll be great. And then someone will go, what I've done is I've done this double time just to see if I could do it. And then there'll be someone go, I'm only going to play it using a fucking drumstick. And then someone will do it playing that. And you're going to get that. But yeah, I'm telling you now, mark my words, that will happen where someone will go, I'll take this particular song and I'll do it. I'll do a playthrough. Like, and that's then you know you've won, Scott. It's full circle.
Oh, that'd be a dream. that's what I've always wanted to do. I always say that, like, you know, like one of my favorite bands release a single and I'm like, that song's really cool. And I start learning it on guitar. I always want to be the first one to put it on YouTube. And then I never do. Because filming and editing videos is art.
Yes. Well, this is the real skill, the editing and stuff. But
oh, yeah.
I'm hoping this is the case. Tell me it is. That this album, as much as I can, there'll be certain things I'll expect from seeing it live that I want to see recreated again and more involved. Is there surprises? Are you going to kind of throw some curves in there? Because
definitely.
That's what I really want.
Definitely. There's stuff that people won't have heard on there before. There's definitely a couple of surprises on there. Maybe a cheeky feature.
Yes.
On there as well, which is quite nice. And I think the flow of the album is going to be a nice surprise for people as well. The singles are going to be amazing to release, but as a complete piece, I think it's going to flow really, really well. There's definitely going to be a few surprises on there for people.
And then is there a thought then to kind of, in a live context, what you want to do, how you want to present it? Are you going to do kind of maybe some headlining shows? Is that the type of thing where you can control it, the visuals and what have you, and really kind of lean into it?
So we've put a lot into it, haven't we, Scott? I think like the live element of it is really, really important for us as well. I think performance side, because obviously we did like one or two gigs before lockdown, and then we did maybe five shows this year or something like that, which was really, really good fun. But I think with us having the album coming out, we've invested in, basic stuff for bands, but stuff that we just didn't have before because we were just coming out of the pandemic and going and playing these songs that we've liked playing in our bedroom for years. So we invested in some IEMs, a new desk, some new gear and stuff like that. And the main investment is time in terms of getting in there and getting a really, really tight show to come out with. So we're going to definitely do and announce at some point soon an album launch show.
Right.
And then we've got some other gigs in the pipeline as well. So due to play Satan's Hollow in Manchester on the 28th of October. So that's quite nice, just before Halloween. And then work with some really, really exciting people in and around the Northwest, in particular Liverpool as well, for some gigs that we've got coming up. So that's going to be really good as well. And hopefully with all the practice that we put in, we can deliver a hell of a show as well.
I've said it before. I'm on record as saying it. I think, easily you're one of the bands to watch. I think that mainly because it's very clear that you adore what you're doing. And this is a very... it's the whole, for every single member of the band, it seems like it's very much an element of passion. It seems that you got it right almost at the first hit, that you've all been in bands where it hasn't worked and you can recognize when it isn't working. And this seems very much like you've all come home with this. And I'm looking forward to the album. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll get them back on. I'll get Jordan on it. I've always said I should get him on. And we'll just do a playthrough episode. That's all we'll do. It'll just be him playing. And I'll try and get extra people to watch, to listen to the show because of that. But yeah, guys, I mean, we'll get you on again. But ladies and gentlemen, it's been really nice to sit down with Scott and Daniel from Beneath the Ruin. Thanks for coming on the show, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Cheers, mate. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
So good.
Yo, Dan and Scott from the quite wonderful Beneath Ruin. Their tour begins on the 28th of October at St. Tolla. What a great venue that is as well to start the tour. UK tour, brilliant. Hearing young and new bands touring, fantastic. You know, new single, Shadow of a Statue, Sand of Lawn as well. If you want to go back and check that, there's some playthroughs that are happening as well on YouTube with that. Fantastic. Just fantastic stuff. It's good to see that. Merseyside, when we started the Metal on Merseyside project, the hope is that there is a lot of great music there. We knew there was, but it's just great to see that happen. Bands producing really vibrant, essential, interesting, and thought provoking music in the metal genre. And Beneath the Ruin tick all of those boxes. Looking forward to seeing them live again. We'll catch them on this tour. And we're sharing obviously the shit out of the singles. I've had a chance to hear the album, and it's there's some really nice stuff on there, some unexpected stuff as well. It takes some nice chances and some nice deviations. I hope you got a lot from listening to that conversation about, you know, we diverted quite a lot and went all over the map, which was nice to do. I love doing that. I think it's excellent to kind of just get a little bit of a vision of what's behind the band and what's behind the musicians that make the music. And I hope you'd enjoy that. I like doing that. If you are in a band and would like to come on the show and talk about some shit, like, we can do that. That's cool. We can do that. I love talking to new bands, even existing bands, and I've definitely got a whole load of ones coming up that I'm really looking forward to talking to. As for the Metal on Merseyside project, I'll be doing some more stuff with that naturally on the podcast and talking to some people involved with that as well. And talking about the launch itself, I want to just say a big thank you to everybody that came to that launch and is supporting the project. Means a great deal to me and my other cohorts, as I call them, the people that, like, you know, like Ned, who brought this into life. Fantastic. So yeah, I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you enjoyed listening to me talk to these bands. One of the things that comes up is that people send me a lot of music, which is fucking brilliant, but they ask me to review that as well. And I don't really do reviews anymore. I used to do that, but it's not really kind of, it opens up the door to me to saying I don't like something, and I don't really want to talk about the stuff I don't like. I do like, I only want to talk about stuff that I think is fucking brilliant. So I don't really review music. I'll happily listen to the stuff that gets said. It's great, but I don't really review it just on the off chance that I might not like it, and I'd have to be completely honest. But I do talk about the things I like, and I really like Beneath the Ruin. So I hope you enjoyed that conversation with me, with Dan and Scott. And I'll probably get some other members of the band on as well, because there's some really good guys in that band that I really want to chat with and talk about. I'll probably talk about how the tour's gone or going. And talk about sort of new music as well. So once again, thanks for listening, and I'll see you at the show.